Live from the 607, it's the Ocho Duro Parlay Hour, where we're talking everything going on in the world of sports. Join in the conversation on social media with the hashtag ODPH, because here we go. Welcome to an all-new edition of the ODPH Podcast. What's happening, everybody? My name is Ken M. Joining me in studio, as always, you know him. He's the co-host. Wait for it. His name is Padawan J.
Let me talk to you.
Yeah, and boy, do we have a lot to talk about in the land of sports. And we definitely want to kick that conversation off after the show as well. So, Pad, after everybody gets on here in the podcast, where do they go?
ODPHpodcast.com.
Right on. Swing on over to the website. You can go check out all the social media accounts. Check out the Patreon link. Shout out to all our amazing patrons. One tier, $2 a month. The T Public store link. The blog section. The classifieds, which has friends of the show, such as 3FN Podcast, Dragon Master Games, Nerd Initiative, and many more. The directory, which, Pad, how many providers are we on?
15,126.
I don't question it. That is why he is a statistician to the stars. Also, make sure to check out the music section of the show as well, because we have to say thank you to all the great bands that let us use their music royalty-free that we get to play each and every week in and out, such as Brian Wolf and the Howlers, Shot of the Robots, Second Suitor, Floodlands, Tom Jolu, and many, many more. Basically, if it's anything and everything, it is the ODPH. You can find it at odphpodcast.com. Keep those conversations rolling. And if you're using hashtags on social media, well, why not use the hashtag ODPHpod? Kicking off this edition of the show, it's kind of crazy that we're already talking football.
Yeah.
The Super Bowl just ended a couple weeks ago. It's still fresh in everybody's mind. But we are already talking the next big event of the calendar year, and that is the countdown to free agency.
Yes.
So a lot of teams are making some moves. Some players are being designated for franchise tags. Mm-hmm. Some are not. We have the updated list, so let's go into a little speculation, shall we?
Yeah, so these are the folks who have not received a franchise tag or even a transitional franchise tag. I know a couple teams use that today, Patriots included. So these folks will be unrestricted free agents once a free agency begins in the NFL, which I believe is a week from tomorrow as we currently record, March 13th. It's an extensive list, not going to lie. I'm showing Ken the list. It is rather large and in charge, so to speak.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go through the whole thing, but just some notable names from each position. Starting with the quarterback position, Kirk Cousins, Baker Mayfield, Russell Wilson, Gardner Minshew, Ryan Tannehill, Joe Flacco, Jameis Winston, Drew Locke, Marcus Mariota, the Maserati, Mitchell Trubisky's in there.
Go back to Buffalo and back up.
Carson Wentz is in there as well. The greatest quarterback in Buffalo history, Trevor Siemian, is in there as well. Nathan Peterman, the other Buffalo legend.
A legend.
Matt Barkley, another Buffalo legend. I'm noticing a trend here. But those are some of the notable names at quarterback that are going to be free agents. Wide receiver, Calvin Ridley, Marquise Brown, Gabe Davis, Michael Thomas, Tyler Boyd, Curtis Samuel, Odell Beckham Jr., DJ Chark, Darnell Mooney, Kendrick Bourne, Marquez Valdez-Scantling, Donovan Peoples-Jones, Chase Claypool, Julio Jones, just to name a few in the wide receiver list, because that one stretches the entire length of the page I am reading from. And oh, by the way, I should mention, this list comes to us courtesy of Mike Clay on Twitter. It's at Mike Clay NFL. He is an ESPN NFL senior writer, so I'm getting this list from his Twitter account. From the running back position. Notable names in here.
The deepest one, I think, in recent memory.
Christ almighty.
If all time.
No, yeah, you're right, because like the entire NFC East is in here. Saquon Barkley, Josh Jacobs, Derrick Henry, Austin Eckler, DeAndre Swift, Tony Pollard, Devin Singletary, you've got J.K. Dobbins, Ezekiel Elliott, Zach Moss, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Gus Edwards, Damian Harris, Kareem Hunt, Deontay Foreman, Cordell Patterson, Jerick McKinnon, Chase Edmonds, Nyheim Hines, Latavius Murray. Let's see who else is in here. We got Boston Scott, Matt Breida's in here, Melvin Gordon, Royce Freeman, Marlon Mack, just to name a few. Jonathan Ward's in there as well from Buffalo. From the fullback position, just a couple of folks. I will read this whole list because it's only four names. Jacob Johnson from Las Vegas, Alex Armah from Washington, Keith Smith from Atlanta, and Michael Burton from Denver. From the tight end position, also some notable names in this list. Hunter Henry, Noah Font, Gerald Everett, Logan Thomas, Mike Gesicki. You've got Irv Smith Jr. in this list as well. Austin Hooper, Jonnu Smith, Harrison Bryant is in there. Tanner Hudson from Cincinnati's in there as well. Colby Parkinson from Seattle. Jimmy Graham from New Orleans. Mercedes Lewis. Let's see, who else have we got in this list? Trevor Wesco from Tennessee. Charlie Warner from San Francisco. Farrell Brown was up there in New England. Sean McKeon from Dallas is in there as well. And then there's a couple of folks on the offensive side of things. For offensive tackles, Tyron Smith, Charles Leno Jr., Michael Onwenu, Trent Brown, Cameron Fleming, Josh Jones. From the guard, just a couple of names here, Kevin Zettler, Graham Glasgow, Damian Lewis, Jonah Jackson, and Robert Hunt. Again, it's a long list, folks. I can't go through every name or we'll be here all night.
Right.
From the interior D-line, some dude named Chris Jones. From the Kansas City Chiefs. You might have heard of the guy. Leonard Williams is in there as well. Calais Campbell from Atlanta. Fletcher Cox from Philly. DJ Reader is in there as well. Daquan Jones from some team up in Buffalo. I've never heard of him. Not sure they've done anything. Shelby Harris is in there as well. Mario Edwards, Justin Jones. Let's see who else. Montrevis Adams from Pittsburgh is in there as well. Edge rusher, you've got Daniel Hunter, Andrew Van Ginkle, Jadeveon Clowney, you might have heard, Chase Young, Zadarkus Smith from Cleveland, DJ Wonum, W-O-N-N-U-M, Jonathan Greenard, Shaquille Barrett is in there as well, Kyle Van Noy, Derek Barnett, Bryce Huff is in there as well from the linebacking core, some dude named Bobby Wagner. Not sure he's ever done anything.
Right, right.
Jordan Hicks is in there. Levante David is in there. Jerome Baker. Tyrell Dodson is in there. Kenneth Murray's in there. Anthony Walker. I almost said Antoine Walker. Crossing sports here. Anthony Walker is in there. Jordan Brooks. Shaquille Leonard is in there. Devin White. Chris Barnes. Mac Wilson from New England is in there. Willie Gay Jr. from Kansas City is in there, notably. Just scrolling through the list here. Akeem Davis Gaither from Cincinnati is in there. From the cornerback position, Kendall Fuller, Kenny Moore the second, Steven Nelson, Stephon Gilmore. Not sure if you've ever heard of that guy.
No.
Darius Williams, Taviri Thomas, let's see, Miles Bryant, Michael Davis, Desmond King, Ronald Darby, Shaquille Griffin. Let's see, Xavien Howard. You might have heard of that guy. Some dude named Eli Apple. Not sure he's ever done anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then from the safety position, you've got Xavier McKinney, Alohi Gilman from the Chargers, Kevin Beard, Julian Blackman is in there, Darnell Savage Jr., Jordan Whitehead, Kevon Wallace, Jordan Fuller. And those are the names, some of the notable names in this list.
Yeah, suffice to say, there is a lot of moving and shaking going on with the NFL teams, and more players are getting designated for tags and not.
Yes.
So going into next week, there is a lot to keep an eye on.
Because isn't also the NFL salary cap increasing next year? So teams will be signing some of these guys.
They will be signing some, but I think we have to take a look at the big names and really focus in on where they're going, because obviously – this is going to impact the NFL draft, most notably with the number one pick.
Yep.
Because it's heavily rumored that the Chicago Bears, who own the number one pick, are going to be trading Justin Fields, their quarterback, to somewhere.
That's the current rumor.
And that would open up Caleb Williams to come in, the projected number one pick from USC, to take his spot. However, it just depends on where these quarterbacks end up. And I know the hot name right now is Kirk Cousins.
Yep.
And we have to kind of take a look at what teams would need a quarterback. I mean, obviously Minnesota would like to keep him, but
yeah,
I think unfortunately
he's fleeced them for enough money at this point.
That's the whole thing. He did 3 years, $95 million guaranteed.
Yep.
And unfortunately, the postseason production, non-existent.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you can do everything in the regular season you can, but let's face it, we don't give out trophies for regular season.
Facts.
You only get one trophy at the end of the year, and that's if you win the Super Bowl. Cousins, unfortunately, was not the guy to get him over the hump. However, he still is a solid quarterback that he can go to another team and possibly bridge the gap between that and some of them they might find in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
So that being said, Pat, do you have any predictions about where you think he's going to wind up?
Well, so I think we just got to run through the list of teams or run through the teams that we think would need a quarterback here. AFC East, obviously the New England Patriots in the worst way possible. I know the current rumor out there with the Patriots is they want to take a quarterback in this upcoming draft, have him sit for a year or two, a la Aaron Rodgers, a la Jordan Love, a la insert recent rookie quarterback here. Learn the system behind a veteran veteran quarterback that like isn't your the veteran quarterback isn't coming in as your future, isn't coming in as your next step. You that is just the bridge to the next step. So obviously the Patriots, you got to figure in there. Pittsburgh is Pittsburgh's obviously one they got to look at because their quarterback play the last couple of years since Ben Roethlisberger retired has been less than stellar.
Mm.
Cleveland obviously needs a quarterback because what are you going to keep Deshaun Watson around? You know, you had he went down with injury. You really haven't gotten a successful return on investment with him, I would say. Through his first two seasons in Cleveland.
The only problem there is the contract.
Oh, yeah, no, that is. That's
going to be the biggest problem with
that. So you got to figure out what you're doing with that, if you're going to keep him, if you're going to, you know, sit on it, whatever else you're going to doing. The AFC South, Indy, I would say, might need one, although they've got the guy they drafted there last year, so you never know. Tennessee needs one, obviously, because, hey, Tannehill was their guy. They benched him. He's now gone from the team. He's going to be a free agent, and the guy they started last year, you never know. AFC West, Denver obviously needs one of the whole mess with Russell Wilson, with Denver letting Russell Wilson go.
Well, let's talk about that for a second. They're letting him go.
Eating $85 million.
$85 million in dead cap space.
God damn.
How do you justify that?
It's a bad breakup and you got to rip the Band-Aid off.
Seriously.
That's all it is.
Yeah, he is going to be another name that I don't know where he winds up.
Yeah.
To be honest with you. I mean, you think about the teams that you mentioned already looking for quarterbacks.
Yep. The issue, though, is he's not going to want to be – Kirk Cousins I can see being okay with that. Like, okay, I'm a transitional guy, you know, at this point. I've made my money. It is what it is. Russell, a couple weeks ago, like a week or two ago, wanted to win two more Super Bowls in, like, the next 5 years.
Well, I think the problem that you have
– And he's mind you, he said that when he was still with Denver, and everyone heard that and went, with what pieces?
Well, that's the whole issue you have with him, and it's not a bad one per se, but let's face it. He did amazing things in Seattle. He has a winner's mentality.
Oh, yeah.
Now, being 35 years of age
– Father time's counting against you.
Exactly, and I think – And we all have to acknowledge this as well. Pete Carroll knew something we all didn't.
Uh-huh.
Because when this was announced that he was moving, we all thought like it was absolutely crazy.
We thought it was
nuts. Mm-hmm. But sure enough, Wilson has declined.
Yep.
And you can say it's the people around him. You could say maybe he clashed too much with Sean Payton, allegedly.
I wouldn't doubt it.
I mean, you just have to go on what you see on the field.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, you did not see the Russell Wilson in Seattle.
Nope.
You saw somebody else. And the question now for teams, especially at Pittsburgh, Chicago.
Pittsburgh, Chicago, yeah. NFC East, the Giants.
The Giants are going to be in that mix?
The rest of the NFC East is fine. Dallas has got Dak. Philly's got Hurts. Washington's fine. North, Minnesota obviously needs one. You know, if we're talking Russell, not Kirk here. Detroit and Green Bay are fine. Chicago, obviously, they're looking at taking Caleb Williams, but would they possibly want to do the traditional route, have Caleb sit for a year? Well, who knows? Atlanta, yes, they need a quarterback. New Orleans, probably. I couldn't even tell you who their quarterback would be. Tampa Bay, clearly, because, hey, their guy was Baker Mayfield, although he's going to be a free agent, so Tampa Bay needs one.
Mm-hmm.
NFC West, I would say Arizona. You can't rule them out because, well, Kyler Murray, you never know. Rams, depends on the situation with Stafford. And I'm not saying there's anything going on. I'm just saying with, like, how old he is. And
physically,
and is he holding up? You know, it wouldn't be a bad idea to look at one of these guys to have as a backup. San Francisco, maybe as a backup. You know, I could see it. And then Seattle, I think Seattle's pretty well set.
Well, I mean, that's the question you got to look at. I mean, I think the three names that jumped out there is the ones we touched upon.
Yeah.
I mean, Kirk Cousins is one that I think he'll be the most sought after one of the bunch.
Oh, by the way, I looked it up courtesy of statmuse.com/ask. Kirk Cousins has a playoff record of 1-4.
Mm-hmm.
Not good.
So that's why I say he would most likely wind up in Atlanta.
Probably.
Because who is Atlanta?
What is Atlanta?
Atlanta is not exactly ready for prime time just yet.
No.
But if he can bridge the gap with somebody, that would help if he can actually get some solid play out of
their skills. There's some decent quarterbacks in the draft classes here.
There's decent, but
it's not stellar, and you never know how it's going to play out, as we've said before.
Right.
But there's some potential.
Potential is there, but I would say if I'm a GM looking at that class coming out, I don't really feel too confident about this.
Like, there's a couple that could be good, but the jury's still out. I mean, if you flash back in time, and if we were doing this podcast, you know, 20 some odd years ago or whatever it was, I was saying, you know what, I think Matthew Leinart's going to be a pretty decent quarterback in the NFL just looking at his game in college. Clearly didn't work out that way.
Right.
And that's just the way it goes. You've got some quarterbacks that are, and not just quarterbacks, but any position in the NFL. You know, some of those guys, great in college. Just whatever reason, doesn't translate.
Well, that's the one question you got to ask, too, when you're looking at these players coming out. And we'll talk about it a little more in depth when it comes to draft time.
Yeah.
But I think if you're looking at a team, you have to really kind of say, okay, are we ready to win now?
Mm-hmm.
Or are we building for the future?
Mm-hmm.
Atlanta is kind of in that weird spot of, we got to try something.
Yeah.
I think they might overpay for Cousins.
The wheels are not even falling off. They've been off since the Super Bowl they lost to the Patriots.
So I think he could go there. He'd be okay.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, there's some decent weapons around him. So, and it's a low enough ceiling because, let's face it, is anyone really expecting greatness out of the NFC South, like in the foreseeable future? I'm not. Falcons fans might be, but I can't speak for them.
Right.
But, like, you've got some decent pieces around there. You've got the Kyle Pitts is there, tight end, Drake London, wide receiver, Bijan Robinson. You know, and right now their quarterbacking depth chart is, according to ESPN.com, Taylor Heinicke is listed as their starter. Desmond Ridder is their backup. And then Logan Woodside is their third-string quarterback.
Who?
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I say Cousins, I think, will be overpaid there, but listen, I'm not mad about him getting the money. I just think that's where he's going to wind up.
End up there, a couple more pieces in the draft or free agency.
I mean,
he could be cooking with something.
They're in a bad division, so he can.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the one nice
thing.
You
can win that division at 800 or 500.
Yeah. Russell Wilson, I have a feeling he's going to wind up in New York. I don't know why.
Oh, with the Giants?
With the Giants.
Yeah, I could see it.
Granted, they're going to have to eat a lot of cap space because of Daniel Jones if they sit him
Jones,
or release him.
Yeah.
That's the problem you have there.
Yeah.
That you're, unfortunately, for whatever reason, you signed him to a big money deal when you should have locked up Saquon Barkley.
And now Saquon Barkley is mark this. If we're doing locks and leaps.
Yeah, he's gone.
Barkley is my lock. He is gone.
Oh, I agree. He's not coming back. And that's going to be a situation for the Giants where I think you're going to have to retool everything. So if you want to go get a quarterback at this on the free agency, I think Russell Wilson might be the one for you.
Right.
Because he's playoff tested, and especially in a division where Philadelphia is still going to contend. Dallas is a contender, whether anybody wants to give him credit or not. Washington, the jury is out.
Oh, my God. I just looked up the cap hit Daniel Jones has. Fuck.
Yeah.
So, according to Spotrac.com, their tracker they have for NFL team salary caps, the number one team with the most salary cap space right now, according to Spotrac, is the Washington Commanders with over $96 million in cap space. Lowest is your Buffalo Bills, who are actually under or over the cap by $40 million, according to Spotrac. Giants are middle of the road there. They're league average. They're right below the league average at 16. They currently have a little over $41 million in cap space. The number one cap hit, because when you click on the team, it sorts it automatically by cap hit highest to lowest. Number one cap hit, Daniel Jones, $47,105,000.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's a bad contract that they're not going to be able to get out of. I mean, they will really have to take a hit and just really take the loss there. Because unfortunately for Giants fans, the experiment's over. The Danny Dimes era is not there.
Right.
And
they never was.
Well, that's the whole problem. They never built up a line and run.
Ooh, they might have an out. According to the contract on Spotrac.com, there is a potential out in 2025. So they might have to sit on him for one more year and then bye.
Well, they're going to have to. I mean, that's a problem. But if they want to get Russell Wilson there, which would make sense.
They're going to have to do some real... Well, thing is, they're going to have to do some real shenanigans in the finance department and what the Giants is going to earn its pay that day.
Yeah, so they'll have a lot to work with. The big X factor coming out of the quarterback position is Baker Mayfield.
Yes.
Baker wound up getting himself into a new contract.
Uh-huh.
I think it would be advantageous for Tampa Bay to try re-signing him.
It'd be smart, yeah.
But I think that he could wind up going to a sleeper team like the Patriots.
I would take it.
Or he could go possibly to a Pittsburgh. I wouldn't doubt that move happening.
Pittsburgh would be wild.
It'd be insane to think about. Oh, my God. But I think that that might be a closer possibility to happen.
Yeah.
I don't think he's going to back up anybody, but I think he'll be a plug and play right now.
Yeah.
And he could be somebody that bridges a gap.
Yeah, I agree with that. The other one I can see going to New England is Joe Flacco.
Flacco could. I mean, New England needs a lot. No offense. But it's
the guy, whoever they take right now, you know, for a veteran quarterback is not going to be the guy. Is not going to be, you know, the savior that takes them out of obscurity the last couple of years and leads them back to the promised land in the Super Bowl. Like, no, it's not happening. You were just the fill guy until, you know, whoever we draft in the draft this upcoming year is ready to go.
Mm-hmm. So, like I say, they're going to have a lot to they could work with. Yeah. Baker going there, I think, would help out tremendously. I think that'd be the best spot for him if he can't re-sign with Tampa Bay.
Right.
I know they just locked up Mike Evans to a big money deal down there, so it just depends on how much they have left to work with. But I think that that could be a solid spot for him to land with.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else is kind of literally up in the air. Like, I'm not sure where anybody's going to wind up going, per se.
For the receiver or the quarterbacks, yeah.
Quarterbacks is kind of wide open. The big one, like we alluded to, and let's just deep dive into it now, is the running back position. This is the deepest one I can remember.
Yeah, no, it's – well, that's to be expected and not totally a surprise given the nonsense going on with their contracts the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the whole thing, too, is the running back position has gone through a transition period, whether people want to admit it or not.
Uh-huh.
That it's not as key of a focal point.
Right.
As it used to be. I mean, we don't have...
Happy league.
Well, that's the whole thing. You have a lot of running back by committees. You don't have the every down backs like you used to. Arguably, the last one in the league right now is Nick Chubb from Cleveland.
Yeah.
Arguably.
Yeah. You can make that argument.
Yeah, I mean, Derrick Henry was, but
free agent.
Father Time's caught up with him.
Yep.
I mean, let's be honest about that conversation.
Yeah. Zeke Elliott used to be, but Father Time.
Yeah, I mean, with the amount of physical damage the body takes during an NFL career, and you're talking about a good solid 8 years for when somebody gets in the league, 6 to 8.
It's a real short lifespan, so to
speak. The body can only handle so much. Yeah. So that's why I say I don't fault anybody for trying to go get the biggest amount of contract they can after the rookie deal.
Yeah.
And I think that's what Saquon Barkley's looking at, because I think that all eyes are on him. He's not going to be designated for a franchise tag. Nope. He will be an unrestricted free agent. The Giants made a big faux pas.
Yeah, they did. They fucked up big time.
Yeah, by signing Daniel Jones instead of him.
Because didn't they also do a big money contract to one of their tackles?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, they did not pay him when they should have paid him. And now they're going to pay the price for it, because I fully think he is winding up lock, stock, and barrel in Houston.
Ooh, okay.
I don't think he's going anywhere else. I think with C.J. Stroud and what they're building there, that's the one key.
That's promising.
That's the one key component that they need.
It's a good opportunity to win right now.
Mm-hmm. And I think that that's what he wants to do, and I think that that will be tremendous for them.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's going to hurt their cap too much to sign him,
depending on what
he's looking for.
Houston, if memory serves, from what I was just looking at, Houston's number one most cap space.
Yeah, so that being said, he would be the first one off the board, I fully believe. I think that that's going to be the biggest one on day one you see.
Houston is number five. They have just over $70 million in cap space.
All right, so they got $70 million over.
Mm-hmm.
See, they got some room to work with.
Yeah.
But like I say, he would be the first one off the board. Next up would be Josh Jacobs for me.
Yeah.
But I'm going to say right now, I think he just re-signs with the Raiders.
Probably. He'll take a few calls, and I'm sure some rumors will pop out about who's giving him a call.
Well,
half the NFC East, I'm sure, will give him a call.
Well, I'm sure, you know, he'll take the best money available. I mean, 26 years old. And
I could see him ending up in Philly.
He could.
I could see it.
He could end up on the East Coast.
Yeah.
I mean, I could see him with a Philly. I can't really see him with a Dallas.
No.
But I think
Dallas hasn't really been known for their run game, since the Emmitt Smith days.
Well, that's the whole point. I think that he's going to want to go somewhere where he feels he has the best chance to win.
Yeah.
I think the Raiders do have a great chance to win. I mean, we talked about starting quarterbacks possibly winding up there. I mean, we have to think about what the Raiders are doing.
Yeah.
I think they're going to look more so in the draft than they're going to look for any free agents right now.
Yes.
Because I fully think Antonio Pierce knows what he has with Josh Jacobs, and I think Jacobs knows about what Pierce is bringing to that team. That's why I think he stays put.
I could see it.
I just don't see him doing it, and they don't want to give him the cap. Listen, he's going to entertain offers. If he can get a better one to go, sure, go ahead and do it. I just don't think it's going to be anywhere else that he can do other than maybe Philly.
Yeah.
Philly would make sense.
Yeah. Win now mentality.
Yeah, I don't think the Patriots, even though, because the Patriots just don't have enough to win now.
No.
Unless he's going for the money, it's not going to be worth it.
I mean, if Belichick were still there, I could see it.
Maybe.
It upped the percentage a little bit, but Belichick's not there anymore.
It would up it, but I don't think it would do it that much.
Yeah.
The other big name for running back is Derrick Henry.
$10, Baltimore.
Baltimore makes the most sense for him.
Yeah.
Because unfortunately, he is on the decline.
Yep.
Being at that age of 30.
Yep.
And with the amount of tread on the tires.
Yes.
That's going against him.
Yep.
With Baltimore, you have a solid run game no matter where you go.
And you don't have to be an every down feature back.
Exactly. So I think that that is the best landing spot for him.
Uh-huh.
I know Miami was in the mix.
Oh, please no.
But the problem you have there is you have a chain.
Yeah.
Who is solid but did get hurt last season.
Yep.
Did not exactly look the best coming back. Like, he looked solid, but
still fine.
I mean, they had Mostert too. I don't think he's going to be coming back there.
Probably not.
But with that being said, I mean, it could be a running back by committee there as well. And it just depends on what they're going to get out of Derrick Henry, because we have to remember, being at that age with the amount of tread on the tires,
mm-hmm.
you could have another situation like Dalvin Cook.
Yep.
And, if I'm the Dolphins, I don't know if I want to do that per se.
No.
They've been making moves to get some players in there. I mean, a Josh Jacobs would help them tremendously there. I just don't know if they're going to wind up doing that, because, like I said, a chain you can make a lot happen with.
Right.
But you just need a complementary piece. With Derrick Henry, though, I don't know if he fits that road.
No, I don't think so.
Baltimore is much better suited for him.
Yeah.
So I could fully see him wind up there. And then everybody else that's in the running back class, I mean, we already went over the name. Austin Eckler is going to be another big name that's mentioned around.
Yeah.
I could honestly see him winding up in Philly.
Yeah, I could see it.
I could see that, because he's more versatile on the passing game.
Or maybe a feature back in San Francisco with McCaffrey.
That could happen too. I mean, I think McCaffrey could use
the nice 1-2 punch.
Right.
Maybe up in Detroit.
Well, I mean, it just depends on who's got the money for it.
Yeah.
That's going to be the big factor there.
Yep.
But I think that you could see a lot of the running backs really get kind of the best position they can, because, like, they're going to get paid, but it just depends on where the best fit is.
Mm-hmm.
And then lastly, I think for the wide receiver position, I never thought I would be saying that the top name to go get is Calvin Ridley at this stage.
Yeah, no, I know Patriots unofficial GM, Matthew Judon, is doing his campaigning for him to come, because Calvin Ridley tweeted on March the 4th, "Boys make these accounts and play GM," to which Matthew Judon said, "He know me or something? Well, anyways, come to the Patriots." Well, so GM Judon doing his best.
Well, you have to think about with him, obviously being out the year.
Yep.
From suspension for gambling.
Yep.
He came back, looked very strong with Jacksonville.
Oh, yeah, he did.
If I'm Jacksonville, I would have locked him up.
That would have made the most sense.
But
then again, it's Jacksonville.
Right.
We know who runs that team.
Yep. So.
Hi, how you doing? We know you're listening.
What's going on, guys? That being said, I mean, you're in a situation there where, like, Ridley can really go to a team and help out.
Vegas, maybe?
Vegas would make sense.
Be a nice 1-2 punch there with Devontae.
I'm going to say something wild. I'm going to say Buffalo. I know nobody's talking about it, but the deal there is with Stephon Diggs' contract. And I know that that is tied up in literal cap space hell.
So are the Buffalo Bills.
Right. But if they're going to start retooling and moving some players, I could see Ridley sneaking up there if they can rework Diggs' deal.
Right.
And if Diggs really wants out of Buffalo, which I don't think he does, I think that's just a lot to kind of, get teams interested in maybe making some moves.
Right.
But I don't think he really wants out of there. But if he did, Ridley could be solid, and they can go get somebody in the draft to bail out. I mean, the Bills still have Shakir up there. He could slide into the 2 position. I think he's better as a 3, but he could still slide in there.
Christ almighty. Y'all got $16 million in dead cap money.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Well, like I say, the Von Miller deal they could get rid of, that would be fine to do.
Yeah.
That would clear up a lot.
Yeah. It'll take some working.
Yeah, which I mean.
Diggs ain't even your biggest cap hit. It's your quarterback.
Oh, yeah, with Josh. But Josh, he's reworked his deal every year.
Right.
Since they signed him to it.
Right.
Because he did the Patrick Mahomes thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So he's reworked it to get people money. He's still getting paid up in Buffalo. Trust me, I'm not worried about Josh's paycheck. I don't think any Bills Mafia would make sure he's personally taken care of if need be. So I'm just saying, like, with him, with him though, he keeps reworking it every year. Diggs is a little more tougher, but but they could make something happen there. And then, like I say, with Von Miller off the books, that would do something. Dawkins, I think, is fine with his contract. I know some people were mentioning that could be a cap deal, but I don't think that's that bad.
Deion Dawkins currently a $16.6 million cap hit.
Yeah. I mean, they're not going to release him by any means, but the Bills will have to do some work. But like I say, they could free up something. Calvin Ridley, I could see winding up there.
I could think of one person you can get to make you happy that give for a little bit of money.
Mm.
Tyler Bass.
Yeah.
$4.4 million. There's a little bit of change there.
It's a little bit for a kicker that's very inconsistent. I'm not talking about that playoff game.
No, you're not. Just
putting it out there, folks. No, I mean, I think with Ridley, though, leading this class, I mean, it shows that the wide receiver position is not exactly booming, per se.
Right.
I know that the Bengals did the smart move by tagging T. Higgins.
Uh-huh.
Probably the smartest move of the free agency, in my opinion.
I've had Tyler Boyd at least twice in the last couple seasons in fantasy. He has done nothing for me.
Well, the one thing is when Joe Burrow goes down, they have a big drop-off in quarterback play.
Yeah, that's true.
So you have to look at the position. And I think for Cincinnati, which I've said on record here many times, they have the best wide receiver core in all the league. If you don't have somebody to get them the ball, it doesn't matter.
That's true.
And that's the big factor here. So depending on where they want to go, I mean, Jamar Chase is going to have some contract issues next season.
Oh, yeah, he is.
So they'll have to figure some money out there.
Yep.
But I think for where this wide receiver class is, there's enough talent out there that some teams can upgrade a bit.
There's some decent, you know, A-minus and B-plus guys in there.
Right.
You know, OBJ's in there, obviously. Chase Claypool, Julio Jones, you know. There's some decent names in there, but it's not an, oh, my God, this is far and away the guy.
Right. And then, you know, very quickly on the defensive side of the ball, I mean, the big one that everybody's watching is Chris Jones from Kansas City.
Yeah, he's going to have a few people calling.
He will, and the only issue is I know that Kansas City is trying to make moves to keep him.
Right.
I just don't know if it's going to be enough. And mark my words, if they lose him,
oh, that's going to be rough.
Them going back to the Super Bowl is going to be extremely tough.
I'm
going to
say, if we're talking percentages, if they lose Chris Jones, the percentage of them going, even just making it back to the Super Bowl, not even winning, at least 10-15% drop.
Oh, easily. But the only question you have now with him is he's at age 30.
Yep.
I mean, for the amount of time that he's been in, and you know, like I say, he's a game changer, but how long can you sign him for, you know, long term?
Right.
That's going to be a situation they're going to have to really take a look at.
Yeah.
And then for a lot of the other defensive positions, I mean, I know that Chase Young is a free agent, but
he'll have a few calls.
He'll have some calls, but like
probably
I say,
back in San Fran.
I would say, well, Frisco maybe, but I could see some other teams making a run at him. I wouldn't doubt Jacksonville doing that.
Yeah, I could see it.
And then, I mean, everybody
else. We do not really like to overpay on players.
Mm-hmm. I mean, 4 years, $96
million, yeah.
In my opinion.
Yeah.
But we'll have to kind of talk about that as we go down to it. But there is so many free agents right now.
It's kind of nuts.
That next week is going to be a lot of moving and shaking for your teams. I mean, Pat, is there any kind of final stamp you want to put on this? We're now hearing about tags that certain running backs have been, certain ones have not.
Yeah.
That's why we're kicking off with this, because next week is going to be even more detailed.
I'm interested to see where some of these guys go because, you know, when you look back at some of these teams that have won the Super Bowl, you know, since the turn of the century, the big name guys have made the difference, but it's a lot of times these smaller guys that at the time your team signs or the team that wins the Super Bowl signs that like you might sit there as a fan and go, why the fuck are we signing this guy?
Yeah.
And then come season's end, they've made a handful of key plays that have really changed the outcome of a game and really swung things in your favor. And this is where I think a lot of times, yes, the NFL draft matters. And, you know, those guys do certainly pay dividends over the course of the year. But like more often than not, it's the guys you get in free agency that make the biggest difference when it comes to how your season goes. And this is potentially where a Super Bowl winning move can be made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I fully agree. I mean, that's why it's always kind of a hand-in-hand move with the NFL draft.
Yeah.
Which the draft was just wrapped up the combine.
Yeah.
Not a lot happening there. I know
the fucking 40-yard dash that one kid hit.
The 40-yard dash.
4-2-1, 40, holy fuck.
Yeah, that's the only one that really kind of stood out.
Well, that and the defensive guy from Penn State who ran way faster than he should for a defensive guy.
Oh, I agree.
Holy shit.
I mean, that was like the only headlines, but they weren't really like the sizzle reel, so to speak. A lot of quarterbacks did not throw, which I was very surprised
well,
at.
Well, and I know a lot of people were making a big hullabaloo about Caleb Williams not wanting to do medicals with at the NFL Combine. But the thing of it is why would you? At first I was like, oh, that's kind of weird. Why would he not do that? And really confused. But then I started reading into it, and it's more of the fact he's not willing. It's not that he's not willing to do it. It's just, why would he want to do a medical thing for, like, say, Kansas City?
Yeah.
Like, there's no shot in hell Caleb Williams is still sitting on the draft board when Kansas City comes to draft. So the only teams he's going to do medicals for are the ones who realistically have a shot to draft him.
Mm-hmm.
So once I heard that, I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole thing with the combine.
Yeah.
It really kind of goes hand in hand, but free agency is what kicks everything off, though.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of moving and shaking going on, so definitely hit us up on the hashtag ODPagePod. What is your thoughts about the current state of NFL free agency? How is your team looking? Who did you lose? Who are you looking to add when free agency kicks off officially next week? Let's have that discussion, shall we? But first, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Do not adjust your dial, or, well, your phone, your watch, or whatever the heck you're using to listen to the awesome podcast you're currently listening to. I am the Duke of Nerds, Tyler Mack. And I am here to tell you that being a nerd can be a bit overwhelming, especially after 30. Life moves pretty fast in our nerd culture, and if you don't take the time to notice things, you miss out. That's why I'm here. As your Duke of Nerds, I am charged with educating, enlightening, and entertaining you on all things nerdy. I do it by running the 30 and Nerdy podcast. 30 and Nerdy is a Badcast Company production and currently playing wherever you cast your pod. Follow along each episode using the hashtag 30andNerdyPod. And check out what all is going on at 30andNerdyPodcast.com. Whether it's DC, Marvel, comics, or video games, I have got you covered. So tune in now. Cheers to you, nerds.
Coming back for another segment on this edition of the ODPH Podcast. And it's time to talk a little UFC.
Hell yeah.
Big event is happening this weekend as the road to 300 gets a little bit closer.
Yes.
So, Pat, let's talk about it.
Yeah, so taking place this Saturday, March 9th, from the KCS Center in Miami, Florida. It is UFC 299.
Yes, indeed. It's a stacked card, first and foremost.
Uh-huh.
I honestly, looking at this, thought this was UFC 300. Like, this should have been.
Arguably, it's better than 300. That's for damn sure.
It's debatable. The main card alone.
Pedro Munhoz is on the prelim card. What the fuck?
Exactly.
Holy shit.
This is loaded beyond belief. And with a main event that has a lot of people talking, and we'll deep dive into it when we get there, but we have to first break down the main card in general. So, Pad, let's talk about it.
Yeah, so the first fight on the main card we're going to be talking about is in the bantamweight division, and that is Peter Yan taking on Song Yadong.
Love this matchup. Yan, former champion, obviously finally done with the Aljamain Sterling nonsense, looking to get back to the belt.
Yeah.
And Yadong is no slouch either right now.
No, he's not.
They're putting some work together. I mean, you want to talk about it a little bit?
Yeah, so Peter Yan's record in 21 professional matches has a record of 16 wins, 5 losses, currently on a 3-fight losing streak, losing to Merab Dvalishvili in his last fight. That was back in March. Then he lost to Sean O'Malley via split decision. That was in October of 2022. Lost to Aljamain Sterling via split decision in April of 2022. But his last win was against Corey Sandhagen, which was a unanimous decision win. That was in October of 2021, so it's been a hot minute. For Song Yadong, in 30 professional matches, he has a record of 21 wins, 7 losses, 1 draw, and 1 no contest. Currently on a 2-fight winning streak, beating Chris Gutierrez in his last fight via unanimous decision. That was back in December of last year. And then he beat Ricky Simone. That was via TKO in April of last year. His last loss was to Corey Sandhagen, which was a doctor stoppage. That was back in September of 2022.
Yeah, this one, like I say, is a really, really solid fight for both. Yan, and like I say, he's been trying to get back to the belt ever since the Aljamain Sterling nonsense, trying to get back to those winning ways, has not had the best of luck.
No.
And especially losing to Sean O'Malley, like, this is a situation that as long as O'Malley is champion, he's going to have to put together some wins fight or win streak to get there, because if he doesn't, unfortunately for him, he's just not going to get that title shot.
Right.
I mean, you take a look about everybody else who's in the rankings. Merab is number one. He should get the next shot. No question about that. Sterling is still listed at number two, even though he is fighting at featherweight now. So he's up a weight class. Corey Sandhagen is in there as well. Mm-hmm. And then obviously Jan being number four. So this is one that if Jan still wants to be in that top contender status, he needs to win.
Yeah.
Yadong is definitely stepping up at number seven.
Yeah.
And this is going to be a fight that I really feel is going to be, I mean, could possibly steal the show.
I mean, it's almost a pick 'em in terms of the odds. According to ESPN.com, Jan is currently a minus 120 favorite, and Yadong is a plus 100. So this is almost a pick 'em.
Yeah, it's very, very close. I mean, I'm going to go with Peter Jan, though, on this one. It's nothing against Yadong. I just think that Jan is more focused, and I think he understands the temp in the room, because it's crazy to say that he's on a three-fight losing streak.
Right, that is, and that's part of the reason I think he's going to emerge victorious, too, is because I think some people might be sleeping on him. And, I'm not saying this one's going to propel him to great heights in title contentions and the longest title run in UFC history, but I think he's going to use that three-fight losing streak as motivation of like, hey, I can still fight. I'm not some slouch who's just going to be a stepping stone for the guys coming up.
Mm-hmm. I could see this one going to the decision, but I think Jan is going to get this one.
I'm going to say Jan in a third round knockout.
Okay. Well, all right.
We'll see.
Yeah, I was going to say, we got to see about that one. That's a bold prediction, but that's what we do here at the ODPH.
Next up is in the welterweight division, where you've got Gilbert Burns taking on Jack Della Maddalena.
Well, this one is a very, very important fight in the welterweight division.
Oh.
This one is for Gilbert Burns. He really wants to get into that title contention. He really wants to make that run for Leon Edwards or whoever's going to be holding the belt by the time he gets the shot. Burns is in this weird position where a loss for him is absolutely crucial, like crushing.
Yeah.
He's been in these great fights. He's been passed over about getting a title shot in certain aspects, in my opinion. And for Jack Della Maddalena, this is a situation that they're very high on him.
I'm looking at the record, and I can see why.
Break it down for us.
Fuck. So we'll leave the main course here for a second. But for Gilbert Burns, in 28 professional matches, he has a record of 22 wins, 6 losses, currently on a 1-fight losing streak. He lost to Bilal Muhammad in his last fight. That was at UFC 288 in May of last year. Prior to that, was on a 2-fight winning streak, beat Jorge Masvidal via unanimous decision in April of last year, submitted Neil Magny in January of last year, lost to Khamzat Chimaev, although at this point, who the fuck hasn't?
That was debatable. That was the close one, though.
Beat Stephen Thompson via unanimous decision, lost to Kamaru Usman, so again, nothing really to, you know, hold your head about. But he also beat Tyron Woodley, Damian Maia, Gunnar Nelson, just to name a few. And then you got Jack Della Maddalena. And holy fuck. 18 professional matches, 16 wins, 2 losses. The man is on a 16-fight winning streak.
Yep.
Lost his first professional fight, which was for a federation called Eternal MMA. That was in March of 2016. He got knocked out in the third round. Then he came back for the same Eternal MMA about, 2 months later, got submitted, lost that. He has not lost a fight since May of 2016. His fight breakdown, like the breakdown by wins, 2 by submission, 3 by decision, 11 by knockout.
Yeah.
God damn.
Yeah, he is definitely fast-tracking for a title shot.
I would say so.
And for him to get a fight against Burns, mark my words, if JDM beats Burns, he's going to get a number one contender match.
You would have to say so.
Easily. I know the UFC is real high on Shavkat.
He's only 11th.
Right.
Maddalena is.
But that's how much faith they have in him against Burns.
Burns is 4.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
That's why I say this is going to be crushing if Burns loses.
Yeah.
Because he's going to wind up sliding down. I'm not going to say he's going to be out of top 10.
He'll slide at least 3-4 spots, though.
Yeah, he's going to really take a drop down.
Yeah.
So that's going to be the big problem here.
Yeah.
And then for JDM, if he gets this win, like I say, you can't deny him that number one contendership. I don't know who he would fight. I'm not even going to try speculating about that. But he'll be in that conversation.
It's going to take a lot of moving parts.
Yeah, like I could see him, if he beats Burns, he'll jump up to at least four.
Yo, give me him versus Colby.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Ian Gary gave the best post-fight speech ever about Mr. Colby Covington.
Ooh.
And he says he wants to retire him. And
I'm on board.
The speech is incredible if you haven't caught it online. So
if he does, I'm a big Ian Gary fan.
Yeah, I was going to say, we'll all be cheering for Ian on that one. But for this fight, though,
Current odds, according to ESPN.com, is JDM minus 170 and Gilbert Burns is a plus 140.
Closer than I thought, which is good.
Yeah.
Which is good because this one, honestly, I hate going against Burns. I really do. But I think if anybody has a chance to stop JDM, it's him.
I'm going to say it's JDM. Dude is on a tear, and I don't know if there's anybody who can stop him.
Yeah, this is going to be a real test for Burns. And it's crazy to think about. But at his age, he really needs to show why he's still an elite fighter. And I hate saying that because he is a great fighter. But this is one of those situations that, unfortunately, he's locked in this division. And if he still wants to stay relevant in that title talk, he needs this win worse. I am going to say this is going to go to decision. This will be a real test for JDM.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you there.
I'm going to say split.
Ooh.
I don't think this is going to be one-sided. Like this will not be unanimous by any stretch of the imagination.
I think it'll be unanimous, but it'll be a close unanimous.
Okay.
It's not going to be an ass-whooping, 30-26,
mm-hmm.
Unanimous. I think it's going to be like a 30-28.
Yeah. Well, could happen.
Next up is in the welterweight division, and it's Kevin Holland taking on Michael Page.
The big signee of the UFC in recent memory is finally here. Venom Page.
Making his debut at the UFC.
Yes, which I know he has a soft spot in Pat's heart because of the Pokemon stuff that he
does.
MVP is no joke. If you've never seen him fight, skilled striker is really going to put the pressure on Holland, and you're in for a real treat with him. Kevin Holland, what can you say about him that he doesn't already say himself? He is a fighter that literally will fight anybody. I believe he has the nickname of Big Mouth from Dana White because he talks a lot during his matches, like a lot.
Yeah.
But I will say this. He goes in there and he'll scrap with everybody. So he's somebody that this is a perfect opponent.
Yeah.
For.
It's a good measuring stick.
Yeah. This is a great one for MVP. I still will say this. As much as I'm a fan of Kevin Holland, the personality.
Okay.
This is MVP.
Yeah.
I think he's going to go in there, and I think MVP knows he needs to put on a show a little bit.
Oh, I think so, yeah, with as much hype as he's coming in there with.
Yeah, I think the only thing that Kevin Holland could have in his favor if he makes this into a grappling match.
Ooh.
His wrestling is not spectacular, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But it's better than MVP's.
So looking at the records for Kevin Holland, 36 professional matches, 25 wins, 10 losses, 1 no contest. Currently on a 1-fight losing streak, he lost to JDM, Jack Della Maddalena, via split decision back in September of last year. Prior to that, was on a 2-fight winning streak. Defeated Michael Chiesa with a Darce choke submission.
That's still wild to me.
In July of last year. And then he beat Santiago Ponzabibo with a knockout in April of last year. Lost to Stephen Thompson with a corner stoppage prior to that. Lost to Khamzat Chimaev with a Darce choke prior to that. And then for one, Michael Venom Page in 23 professional matches, 21 wins, 2 losses. Currently on a 1-fight winning streak. He beat Goody Yamuchi with a leg kick TKO. That was a Bellator 292 in March of last year. Prior to that, he was on a 1-fight losing streak. He lost to Logan Storley via split decision in May of 2022. Prior to that, was on a 1-2-3-4-5-6-fight winning streak. So hell of a record there.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm going to agree with you. Listen, it's nothing against fucking Kevin Holland. Kevin Holland is a good fighter. I got a lot of respect for the guy. It's MVP all day.
Yeah, I think it just unfortunately he's going to be the stepping stone here.
Wrong place, the wrong time.
Yeah, because I think for Holland, Holland could pull off an upset. Which it's possible. I'm not saying this is going to be, an absolute different class level here.
Sure.
This is just one that if he gets into a standing match with MVP, it's done. He needs to take this to the ground and just grind this out. If he doesn't do that within the first 2 minutes, it's already done.
Right.
Just my call on that.
And then in the co-main event of the evening, it is a lightweight division matchup with Dustin Poirier taking on Benoit Saint-Denis.
This is wild to me. I'm sorry. This is wild. Saint-Denis is ranked 12th.
Uh-huh.
Poirier is number 3.
Ooh. So that's farther than the 11-4 we got earlier.
Yeah. I mean, what can you say about Dustin Poirier?
Uh-huh.
Superstar in the sport right now.
Yeah.
Never has been in a bad fight to my knowledge.
Not that I can think of.
He's always willing to fight. He's built to that Cerrone anytime, anyplace, anywhere mentality.
Beat Conor McGregor twice in a row.
Yes, he did. Embarrassingly.
Hi, coach.
Yep. And in this kind of situation, he's a fighter much like Gilbert Burns.
Yeah.
He's in a weird spot.
Yeah.
Because he's nearing the end of the fight career for him.
Currently 35 years old, just turned 35 back in January.
Right. But when you talk about the battles he's been in.
Yeah, that's true. Fights dating all the way back to his, holy fucking shit.
Yeah.
His first professional fight. Now, mind you, this is professional. This doesn't count any amateur stuff he might have done beforehand. His first professional fight was for a federation called US MMA. This was a win against Aaron Suarez, who he knocked out in the first round on May 16th, 2009.
Yeah.
God damn.
He's been around a long time. He has been in some insane battles over the years. Suffice to say, he's in that whole BMF talk, no matter what you want to say.
Cobb Swanson was in there. Max Holloway. Some other names in here. Oh, Jim Miller, Eddie Alvarez, Anthony Pettis.
Korean Zombie.
Gaethje, Habib, Conor McGregor, Oliveira, Chandler. Yeah, just to name a few.
He's fought every name that's current right now.
Yeah.
Like, that's the easiest way to describe it. I think maybe with the exception of Nate Diaz, because I don't think they ever pulled that one off.
It does not look like it, no.
No, that was like the dream fight that should have happened and never did for reasons. So, that being said...
Holy shit, the fucking Korean Zombie fight was on free TV.
Yes, it was.
What the fuck?
I will never forget that.
Barbaro choke submission, too. Oh, my God.
It was the wildest ending of a fight I think I'd seen in quite some time.
Fourth round,
they were going back and forth, and he put him in that triangle choke and also put an armbar on, too, at the same time.
It was a UFC on Fuel TV fight, so that was free TV.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Talk about giving away the main event.
Oh, my God, yeah. Like, it was absolutely wild to see it play out. So, in this situation, I mean, Poirier is a legend. Him taking this fight against Saint-Denis, this is a little strange to me. I'm not going to lie. But, I mean, let's take a look at Saint-Denis' record, and maybe we can kind of make some clarification about this. Because, for me, it just doesn't add up.
Sure. So Benoit Saint-Denis in 15 professional matches has a record of 13 wins, one loss, one no contest. I'll break down the wins. Four are by knockout, nine are by submission, none are by decision. So he is currently on a 5 fight winning streak. Knocked out Matt Frivola in his last fight. That was at UFC 295 back in November. Knocked out Thiago Moises. That was in September of last year. Submitted Ismael Bonfim with a face crank. That was back in July of last year. Then he knocked out Gabriel Miranda with punches back in September of 2022. Got a rear naked choke submission win against Nicholas Stolze. That was in June of 2022. His last and only loss came to Elzio Zaleski dos Santos. Was a unanimous decision loss. That was in October of 2021.
Yeah. So, I mean...
Dude is like an everything or nothing kind of guy.
Yeah.
God damn.
Which, this fight will be entertaining.
Yeah,
there's no question about it, but I'm just like, looking at the records, I don't know, it just doesn't add up to me.
Uh-huh.
I mean, maybe, I don't know, what do you think?
I mean, it's certainly a little odd, but we've seen these guys come around every now and again where it's like, yeah, they've got no submission or no decision wins.
Yeah, and they want to put on a show. This is going to be an absolute show.
All highlight reel.
I am taking Poirier, though.
Okay.
I don't know about you, Pat.
I'm going to roll the dice here. I'm going to say Saint-Denis.
Okay.
He's going to get lucky. He's going to catch Poirier with something that he wasn't quite ready for.
This could definitely happen. I mean, the thing is, Poirier is going to stand in that pocket. He's going to take some damage. They'll make this an entertaining fight.
Uh-huh.
If Poirier wins, though, the next fight, I don't even know where we go.
Right.
Like, he'd have to call somebody out. I know it won't be Connor.
No.
But he's going to have to call out somebody to get some kind of, you know, buzz going. Because I would say, I fully think if he gets this, he's going to want to make one more run for a title.
Probably.
I don't know if he's got enough to get to Machaev, though. He would need a lot of help with
He'd
that.
He'd need at least one more win.
Yeah, I just don't know if he can do it at this stage. I'm not rooting against him. I love Poirier.
Right.
Every time I hear the James Brown song come out, I get hyped. But in this situation, I think he's got one more left in him at least, and then we got to figure out where we go from here.
Yes.
Maybe, just maybe, we can pull off that Nate Diaz fight because of reasons. I don't know. I just got to put that karma out in the
you
world.
You never know. But then we get to the main event of the evening, the fight we're all here to see. This is for the UFC Bantamweight Championship, and this is Sean O'Malley defending his belt against Marlon Vera. Going to give you a little bit of records here. So for let's start with the champ. We got Sean O'Malley in 19 professional matches, has a record of 17 wins, 1 loss, 1 no contest, currently on a 2-fight winning streak. He defeated Aljamain Sterling via TKO in his last fight. That was back in August. That what earned him the UFC Bantamweight Championship. Before that, he won a split decision victory against Peter Yan in October of 2022. The 1 no contest was against Pedro Munhoz. That was an accidental eye poke. That was back in July of last year. And then prior to the no contest, he was on a 3-fight winning streak, knocking out Raulian Paiva, knocking out Chris Muntino, and then knocking out Thomas Almeida. His one and only loss came to Marlon Vera.
Yep.
TKO at UFC 252. That was back in August of 2020. Then you flip over to Marlon Vera in 32 professional matches, has a record of 23 wins, 8 losses, 1 draw, currently on a 1-fight winning streak. He beat Pedro Munhoz via unanimous decision. That was back in August of last year. Then before that was on a 1-fight losing streak. He lost to Corey Sandhagen with a split decision loss. That was back in March of last year. Prior to that was on a 4-fight winning streak, knocking out Dominic Cruz in August of 2022. Unanimous decision win against Rob Font in April of 2022. Knocked out Frankie Edgar in November of 2021. And a unanimous decision win against Davey Grant. That was in June of 2021.
Yeah, this fight had been a long time coming, in my opinion.
I would say so.
Sean O'Malley, love him or hate him, he is one of the UFC favorites.
Uh-huh.
He is a character that's larger than life.
Facts.
I mean, let's face it, he's following that whole Conor McGregor type vibe.
They're letting him wear pink shorts to the ring.
Yeah,
as champ.
He gets a lot of unique things allowed for him.
This is true.
Just because I've said this many times. He's somebody that if you can sell yourself as a fighter and you can show up and fight.
He is, like you said, he's a character and he's a personality. And as we've said before, UFC very much lacking in those departments those days.
Right, because he generates a buzz. Yeah. No matter if you love him or you hate him.
Yeah.
However, though, the fight he had with Vera,
uh-huh.
Vera clearly stopped him.
Okay.
That was the fight that he had his leg taken out in the first round.
Oh, yeah. And he was like, I'm limping on one leg the rest of it. I remember that one. Yeah, yeah.
That's the one. Then
he pulled it out.
Yeah, he had to get surgery after. Like,
yeah,
he was a mess.
He fucked his leg up.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
And Vera should have gotten shot to a title shot right after.
Yep.
He did not.
Yep.
I still say that's, in my opinion, one of the most egregious miscues of the UFC in memory.
Don't forget, rankings matter.
Right. That's the whole thing. Like, he took out their golden child here, so to speak.
Uh-huh.
And got nothing for it. So I am extremely happy he's here now. Yep. And I will say this. Kudos to Sean O'Malley because he knew he should have got the title shot.
Yep.
And he did. He said the minute he got the belt, he's like, Vera should get it. We have to settle this for their own sake. So listen, as a business person,
hey,
smart.
Yeah.
You have a storyline. Fans are engaged.
Uh-huh.
You're going to come out there. You're going to put on a show.
A little bit of history.
Mm-hmm. It's perfect. Perfect marketing. Shout out to you, Sean. So we have to kind of put this all in perspective. Pad, who you got and why?
So according to ESPN.com, currently Sean O'Malley is the favorite. He is a minus 280. Marlon Vera is a plus 230. No disrespect to Sean O'Malley, because otherwise he'd whoop my ass. But I'm going to say Marlon Vera. I think the dude is motivated. I think the dude is feeling a little passed on, a little slept on, overlooked, if you will. And he wants to prove the world, like, hey, you should have given me my shot 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to regret not giving it to me now. And he's going to beat him.
Whew. I tell you what, I'm hoping Vera pulls this off.
Okay.
I really do. Listen, I think that he's just a guy that's been overlooked so much. He knows how to beat O'Malley. Unless Sean can check a leg kick.
Which, Christ, I hope he's learned in the last 4 years.
I hope he has, too. Because the one thing that he does very well, he has knockout power for that division. He can strike very, very well.
Right.
However, I don't think he wants to get into a striking match with Vera.
Oh, no, you don't.
Because Vera will just pick him apart at the legs.
See what happened last time? That's going to happen again.
And I think that that's what the same game plan Vera's going to go in with.
Yeah.
It just depends on if O'Malley has evolved enough to go take that. Now, I think he has, but I still like Vera in this one. I think Vera is a safe pick. I think he's going to win this via decision.
Okay.
I think you, unfortunately, like it's not going to be like a knockout, sizzle round, reel, anything like that.
Right.
Because I think, one, O'Malley understands the temp in the room. He has to be patient about this.
Okay.
And I think what he's going to do is be very methodical about this pacing.
Sure.
I don't think he's going to go super crazy trying to get a knockout early.
Probably not.
I mean, he might be feeling a little fired up because obviously there is doubt that he can beat Vera.
Right.
And it's a great storyline to follow. I think for him, his keys to victory, he's got to keep that distance and he has to check those leg kicks.
Yeah.
Because I think that that is exactly what Vera is going to throw at him.
For days.
Mm-hmm. And I think the problem that O'Malley is going to have to do is he's going to have to stick and move a lot.
Yeah.
I don't know how his wrestling is these days. I don't know if he wants to get into that because if he could do some dirty boxing against the cage, he might be able to swing something out.
Right.
But it's just a matter of what he can pull off there and do from. So
he is currently, according to his Wikipedia page, Sean O'Malley is a brown belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu.
All right, so he's been unproven on that.
Yeah.
I think that might be his key to victory. If he can get if he can get Vera on the ground, he might be able to do something.
Right.
But if it's a striking fest, it's going to be Vera all day, which I do like. It's Vera and New by split decision.
Should also note, Sean O'Malley is a part of the MMA Lab fight crew, which you go to their Wikipedia page. Notable fighters, obviously himself, Jared Cannonier, Korean Zombie, Benson Henderson, just to name a few. So there's certainly some sparring partners in there.
Hendo will help him out a lot.
Oh, yeah, he will.
Hendo might be the biggest asset there that he can get. So we'll have to wait to see what happens here, but there'll be a lot of storylines coming out of this for UFC 299.
Yeah.
As we get closer to 300, but this one's top to bottom. What, talk about a fight card.
Very good card.
Very good card. We definitely want to hear your picks, so hit us up on those hashtags. Hashtag ODPHPod. What are your picks for UFC 299 taking place from Miami this weekend? So definitely hit us up. Let us know. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Do you like comic books?
What about movies and TV shows?
Well, we may be the show for you.
We're Hops Geek News, a weekly podcast that discusses comics, movies, and TV shows while featuring a beer of the week.
Every week, we chat about what we messed up on the week before, and then we dive into what we're reading and watching, as well as some news.
We then wrap it up with a geek-themed topic of the week.
You can find us anywhere you listen to podcasts by searching Hops Geek News.
Cheers.
Coming back for another segment on this edition of the ODPH podcast. Got to talk a little WWE pro wrestling.
Oh, yeah.
So the road to WrestleMania is getting a little more clear.
Uh-huh. About 30 days away, 31 days.
Yes, and obviously the biggest show of the calendar year for WWE, and well, let's face it all, pro wrestling,
yep,
is starting to get a little more clearer. Mm-hmm. We've had The Rock cut 21-minute promos on Instagram because he's very aware of the time frames on television.
Yeah, Jesus Christ. If you watch that whole thing, boy, you got a lot more free time than I do.
Yes. And obviously with Monday Night Raw just happening, we do have a little bit of an idea about one very big title defense that is going to be happening at the show.
Mm-hmm.
But Pat, let's recap what we got so far.
Yeah, so of course the matches we do know are taking place on the show of shows, the showcase of the Immortals. Obviously in the main event, it'll be Roman Reigns defending his undisputed WWE Universal Championship against Cody Rhodes.
Yes, the match everybody's been waiting for is finally going to happen.
The other one we know is going to be Seth freaking Rollins defending his World Heavyweight Championship against Drew McIntyre.
The heel of all heels.
Doing the Lord's work. Good God.
Did anybody see the footage of him leaving the show last night?
I love the caption he put on the tweet where the people were booing him, and he used the Simpsons quote. Are they saying boo? No, they're saying boo earns.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
While he's playing Cult of Personality.
Uh-huh.
Driving away. Oh, legend. Legend.
Dude is doing the Lord's work.
Yes,
he is. Let me just say. Then the other one matches we know are currently going on. You've got a singles matchup for the WWE Women's Championship with Io Sky defending her belt against Bayley.
Yeah, this one's starting to pick up some storyline steam, which is good. Dakota Kai did the heel turn on Bayley.
Everyone saw coming.
Yep, everybody had been waiting on. So,
well, everyone except Bayley.
Right. So now it's a question of who's going to help Bayley fend off Damage Control at Mania.
Well, there was one name you could have thrown out there, but with the current rumors going on where she's going to land, probably not likely.
Yeah, Sasha Banks, a.k.a. Mercedes Moné, has been tagged about being somewhat involved. There's a lot of online speculation about it.
Yep.
It's not to say it's not happening, but with the amount of promotion AEW is doing for their big business show with the dollar signs.
Yeah, better deliver.
They have to really deliver. I know there's a lot more speculation we'll break down on Wrestling Night Live this week.
Ooh.
But let's just say this. If this falls through, this would be a very bad loss for AEW.
Yes.
And this would be WWE's gain. I fully, though, think in that role will be Jade Cargill.
That was my guess because they set up that whole angle on SmackDown last week where Dakota turned on Bayley and there was the whole they beat her up in the ring and then they went backstage and you saw... who's the GM there? It's Nick.
Nick Aldis.
Thank you. I forgot the last name there. Nick Aldis was courting, I guess you could say, or bringing into his office, trying to convince Jade Cargill to sign with SmackDown or whatever it was. So you got the out or intro, I guess you could say, with that one. Now another matchup we know is Rhea Ripley is defending her Women's World Championship belt against Becky Lynch.
They're setting this one up very nicely.
Yes, they are.
I have to say, after coming out of the Elimination Chamber, this is starting to pick up a little more steam as well.
Yeah.
Kind of interesting how they're doing Nia Jax and Liv Morgan involvement.
Liv, I understand.
Yes.
You know, the whole Nia thing kind of just, it should be me and them. You lost. Calm down.
Yeah.
I don't think they're going to turn it into a triple threat with Liv,
mm-hmm.
but I think Liv might end up interfering with the result of this match. And then, because Backlash is the next one after this, and that's the one in France,
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't doubt we get a triple threat with Rhea, Becky, and Liv.
I think maybe at some point, I don't know if they're going to put Liv in that for a triple threat.
Okay.
I don't know. Like, it's a great idea, but I don't think they're going to do that. I have this sinking suspicion they're going to do almost like a scramble match.
Ooh.
And that's where you're going to see, like, Liv versus Tiffany Stratton versus,
yeah.
like, something like the Elimination Chamber, something okay. like Money in the Bank, but they'll okay. do a little different style.
Okay. And then the other matchup we know is going to be a singles matchup for the WWE Intercontinental Championship with Gunther defending his belt against... We got to wait and see. It was announced on Monday Night Raw that there will be a gauntlet match on the March 11th episode of Monday Night Raw, with the participants being Bronson Reed, Chad Gable, JD McDonagh, Ricochet, Sami Zayn, and Shinsuke Nakamura.
Mark the tape now. Chad Gable is winning that.
That would make the most sense, but then it also kind of begs the question, why is Sami Zayn in there if not him?
To throw everything off.
Ah, okay.
Because Sammy would make a lot of sense business-wise.
Right.
And Sammy is the ultimate underdog. Gunther is such a dominant champion.
Yes.
But the fact they circled back to Gable and they did that promo segment.
Uh-huh.
And this year is all about finishing the stories.
True.
I'm sorry. I will be shocked if it's not Chad Gable.
Right.
Which would be a WrestleMania moment unlike any other. Sami Zayn, see, he's kind of in this interesting situation, in my opinion.
Okay.
He is in that Kevin Owens. He is in that Baron Corbin type of plug and play.
Yeah.
Like, they had their WrestleMania moment last year.
Yeah.
And it's not to say they're not worthy of having another one this year. They absolutely are.
You don't need to have one every year, though.
Right. And if the storyline is, you know, Sami is the underdog and he's not getting that chance, I think in this situation... It would make a lot of sense for him to just come up short again.
Sure.
And then you could set up something later. But I think Chad Gable getting this one-on-one would be huge.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody would see it coming, but the storyline is there. And I think it would be wonderful if they did this. The only other thing, which I'm throwing this out there, but I don't think this is going to happen,
okay.
is if they just said we're going to have a seven-way.
Oh, I have heard rumors of a ladder match.
Yep, throw a ladder in there and let him go to town.
Historically, ladder match with the Intercontinental Championship at WrestleMania, historically good.
Yes, and if they have everybody involved that they do for the gauntlet match,
yeah,
makes perfect sense to me.
I'm all right with it.
So I'll have to wait to see about that.
But yeah, those are the matches we know right now. Any speculations on what we might see for some of the other ones? I know the tag belts aren't up there for men's or women's.
Well, the tag belts, I think, are all going to be Awesome Truth versus Judgment Day.
Well, I could see it, yeah.
I think that's going to free, because they're going to wind up getting the belts, Awesome Truth is.
Yeah.
And that will free up Damian Priest to do the cash-in.
Okay.
That night. I fully think that's going to happen.
Okay.
As far as the U.S. title on SmackDown, I know everybody thinks it's Logan Paul versus Randy Orton. I'm still sticking to my guns about this one.
Okay.
I fully think that Logan Paul faces L.A. Knight
yeah.
beforehand and drops it on SmackDown.
Could be.
And then it'd be AJ versus Knight at Mania, which is fine.
Yeah.
And then Logan versus Randy, and you let him go from there.
Yeah.
I could fully see that happening as well. The women's tag team titles, I'm not sure who's going to exactly defend there.
I'm going to say probably a triple threat between Kabuki Warriors and then, I'm trying to think of the other, Zoe Stark and...
Well, they're getting their match next week.
Right, right. But I'm saying... Kabuki War, I'm going to say it's going to be a triple threat because there's going to be some sort of shenanigans involved that turns it into a triple threat.
I would love to see it actually be a fatal four-way with the champions, and then you take one team from Raw, one team from SmackDown, one team from NXT, and go from there. I think that would be fun. I think that that would make a lot of sense,
That'd be a good feature for the folks down in NXT.
Yeah, I think because NXT is going to get somebody. Like I say, Bron Breakker is going to get a big profile match too.
Yeah.
I don't know against who.
Could be.
I think if they really want to go for something crazy, what they should do is just do the ladder matches for the mid-card titles.
Yeah.
One on night one, one on night two.
Yeah.
And let everybody go crazy.
Call up Ilya Dragunov for a night, Bron Breakker versus Ilya Dragunov. My only wish is if they do the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal at Mania this year and not on the SmackDown before, I hope Joe Gacy gets involved in the Battle Royal because he's from that area.
I'd love to see it.
I'd love to see Gacy get onto Mania in Philly because he's, like I said, from that area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of different ways they can go about this. Yeah. But for two nights of WrestleMania, they're setting it up nicely. We got our first announcement of who's going to be in the Hall of Fame class.
Paul Heyman.
Absolutely well-deserved.
Well-earned.
Yeah, we were talking about this on when we were watching AEW
right.
for the Revolution pay-per-view off-air, the Nerd Initiative Wrestling team. And we were talking about who was going to get in, and I was like, yeah, like, Paul Heyman makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Because I honestly thought he was in already. Yeah, but I did not realize he wasn't. But
rumor has it he's been offered several times and turned them down at each turn.
Yeah, because it was something about him being still active.
Right.
But I think for him being in Philly, plus this is Triple H's show
yep.
that he's doing.
Who do you think does the introduction speech?
That's a great question.
Mm-hmm. There's several candidates.
Kayla Braxton threw her name in. I'd love to see that personally. I could see it being Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Okay. I was thinking maybe Tommy Dreamer.
Dreamer would make sense. In fact, I don't doubt Dreamer getting put in.
Yeah.
Because I think that they have a great...
They're going to go Philly heavy with this, with Hall of Fame, I think.
Yeah, but you know, it makes perfect sense to do it. You're going to see a lot of ECW guys get
in. Yeah,
I've heard Haku's name has been mentioned.
Yes, Haku would be amazing.
Yes. Yes, I think he would be. I know Tom Craven, who's in the background here, is definitely marking out about that as we were recording.
All Philly!
Yes. So, I mean, they have so many different directions to go, but that's the nice thing right now is we're going to start seeing the pieces get put together.
Yeah.
As we get to Mania, I think the pacing has been fine for it.
Yeah.
I know there's having Rock, Roman, Cody, and Seth on SmackDown this week.
Yep.
So I fully imagine they're going to load that up. That's why I say don't doubt Logan Paul versus LA Knight on the show.
I just want LA Knight to be featured in the Backlash pay-per-view so I can hear the fans in France go, LA Knight, oui.
It's going to happen.
I need that to happen.
There's no question about that. But WWE had a solid week, but we definitely have to give some flowers out to AEW.
Absolutely. As much as I don't like their programming, I got to give them credit for this.
Yes. AEW Revolution was probably their best pay-per-view they've done.
Okay.
But more importantly, it was the final match for Sting.
Yes.
And I will say this, and if you're a longtime listener to the ODPH, you know Pat is not a fan of AEW.
Nope.
However, though, you got to give the devils their due for this one.
I do. Absolutely. No, I feel they handled everything with Sting. While I didn't watch the pay-per-view, I did see the little vignette they filmed with Sting at the movie theater.
It reminded me of Clerks 3, though.
Oh, okay.
That was the scariest thing for me. I was like, oh, my God.
So I did love the vignette they filmed with kind of like the retrospective in photos, you know, and then that leading to the entrance, which, hey, fun fact, the lookalike Stings from his early days, then the NWO Red days, those were his sons, which is an awesome fact about that whole entrance. But no, and then just finding out that, like, he went over and he won in his final match, which makes all the sense in the world. Beautifully handled by AEW.
Yeah, we have to give them their flowers on this one.
Even acknowledged it on Monday Night Raw.
Yeah, which, I mean, It goes to show, folks.
Go ahead and sit there and tell me Vince is still involved. You honestly think with fucking AEW and everything going on there that he'd give them the goddamn time of day to even acknowledge something that happened on their programming?
Exactly. And I was going to say, too, if you don't think the wrestlers and powers that be don't watch each other's show and have their respect for the wrestlers, like I say, that was a prime example. Triple H made sure that that got done in there. I know Pat McAfee and Michael Cole made a point to get that in there as well, as they should. Sting is a legend in the business. The match itself was absolutely insane. I know some people freaked out online because panes of glass, which Rich actually called on
Darby
Wrestling
only
Night
Live. Needed 14 stitches, though.
It was an insane bump, but the thing about it is this is how Sting wanted to go out. They wanted some kind of really insane match to do it. They did it. The only thing that was not AEW's fault, but they ran out of time during the pay-per-view feed, but they posted him right online, the post-farewell speech.
Oh, okay.
That was the only thing that was a hiccup, but it is what it is.
Oh, that's the trouble with live TV.
Yeah, but I fully say they handled it perfectly.
Yeah.
It's a great send-off for Sting. I'm sure he'll be an ambassador to the company.
He'll do
much,
something.
Much like how AEW or WWE has Legends deals.
Yeah.
I fully think Sting's going to have one with them.
Could be even like a trainer backstage type person.
I can see him doing backstage a little bit because he was really having fun doing it.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to be more of a Legends deal type deal
that
they do. But listen, we want to make sure we give them their flowers about this one. So Tony Khan and Powers of B, because we do know you guys listen to us. Hi.
Uh-huh.
Nice job with that.
Yeah.
That being said, hit us up on that hashtag ODPagePod. Let's talk some pro wrestling. What are you feeling about WrestleMania? How's it shaping up for you? Is your matches fitting your appetite for pro wrestling that weekend? Because it's going to be a long weekend for any wrestling fan to go check out the shows. And what do you think about Sting's last match with AEW? I think it was handled very well. So does Pad. So we definitely want to hear your opinions about that. And if you want even more pro wrestling talk, well, make sure you tune in every Thursday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, the Nerd Initiative YouTube and streaming services networks for another edition of Wrestling Night Live. That being said, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
This is Tom from Tom Joe Lou.
This is Matt from Sideroom Sounds.
And you're listening to ODPH Podcast.
Wanna go where no one knows my name, to the desert, the oceans, or the plains.
Cause I wanna... Coming back for the final segment on this edition of the ODPH Podcast, Pad. What you got?
Got a couple things to talk about. First of which is obviously being the local minute and looking at the standings for the Federal Prospects Hockey League. That is, of course, the league where our local Binghamton Black Bears play in, and the Empire Division. Another week, still in first place.
Let's go for
the Binghamton Black Bears. Through 40 games played, they have 26 wins in regulation, six losses in overtime, no wins in overtime, but they do have two shootout wins. In first place with 88 points, they are ahead of Motor City in second place with 73 points. Danbury's in third place with 67 points. Elmira's in fourth place with 49 points. And Watertown is in fifth place with 42 points. Looking at the schedule from this past week, they had just the one game. It took place on Friday, March 1st. They were on the road playing the Elmira River Sharks, and they lost by the final score of 6-3. Looking ahead to the games they have this upcoming week, they got a couple games this weekend. Both of them are on the road. First is Friday, March 8th, at 7:05 p.m. Eastern. They are taking on the Elmira River Sharks. Then Saturday, March 9th, 7:00 Eastern, they are on the road taking on the Danbury Hat Tricks. But fear not, folks, you don't have long to wait, because Friday, March 15th, they do return home for a three-game series. They're home all next weekend playing the Mississippi Seawolves for two of those games, and then they're playing Elmira for the third game. But for more tickets, information, all that good stuff, you can go to binghamtonblackbears.com. Then we got to talk a little bit of college basketball, women's college basketball, in fact,
yes,
because we got to give our flowers and give our due and give our congratulations to Iowa's own Caitlin Clark, who became the all-time leading scorer in NCAA history, men's and women's, passing Pistol Pete Maravich for the all-time record. Pistol Pete Maravich scored 3,667 points in his three seasons at LSU from 1967 to 1970. Caitlin Clark passing that mark, which, hey, kudos to her. It's impressive as all hell.
Amazing feat to accomplish. So congratulations out to her.
Yeah, so definitely we'll see what happens next. Obviously, they've got the tournament coming up, so we'll see how far she goes in the women's basketball tournament. But then she's expected to go to the WNBA in the upcoming WNBA draft, so we'll see where she goes from there.
Easy number one first pick.
Oh, absolutely. Like the biggest no-bro. You know what I do if I'm the team with the number one pick, though? Let it run the full time limit.
Yeah.
Just to make people really sweat it out. Then we got to talk some baseball because, hey, we are in the middle of spring training.
Yes, we are.
Major League Baseball season does kick off here at the end of the month here, so we're about a little over three weeks away. A couple of notes from the stuff going on at spring training camp. For the Boston Red Sox, a little bit of a hit today because it is being reported by Jeff Passan of ESPN that their right-handed pitcher, Lucas Giolito, might miss the season with an elbow injury because, according to Jeff Passan, quote, initial imaging showed damage in the right elbow of Boston Red Sox starter Lucas Giolito that could cause him to miss the 2024 season, league sources told ESPN. He was expected to be the opening day starter this year. He's got a partially torn ulnar collateral ligament, so the UCL, and he's also got a flexor strain that might need surgery. And anytime you start talking UCL and flexor or anything to do with the pitching arm on a pitcher, probably done for the year.
Yeah.
He was just one of a few free agent signings the Red Sox did over the winter. They also got Liam Hendricks, who's also expected to miss most of the season after undergoing Tommy John surgery. So definitely a hit for the Boston Red Sox, who are already looking not that great going into this season.
Yeah, very crucial blow to their season.
Yeah, also a crucial blow potentially for their season for the St. Louis Cardinals because their ace, Sonny Gray, could miss opening day because he's got a hamstring strain. He got during his latest spring training outing. He'd been slated to start against the LA Dodgers on March 28th. Gray said, quote, if it's in the cards for me to still do that, then obviously I'm going to do everything in my power to make that happen. Close quote. President of Baseball Operations, John Mosliak said, quote, we've had some encouraging news that it's a mild strain, not going to put any return to play date on it. It's been less than 24 hours. We're going to see how he responds over the next few days, but from the MRI reading, we're definitely encouraged. Fingers crossed this isn't something that's going to linger too long, close quote. So if you're the St. Louis Cardinals, definitely going to be sweating that one out because strains when you're a pitcher are never anything to screw with. Speaking of injuries and stuff, and hopefully nothing too serious, hopeful speedy recovery to Ronald Acuna Jr. He is expected to be ready for opening day with the Atlanta Braves after he had a more thorough examination of his right knee. They didn't find any serious issues. Acuna did say, quote, I don't know when I'll play again, but I feel like I can play today. I can play every day, but I've got a boss. When they tell me you can play, I'll play, close quote. I mean, listen, he came off a stellar season last year. He was the first player in baseball history to hit 40 home runs and steal 70 bases, and he was a unanimous choice for MVP after he hit 337 and 41 home runs, 106 runs batted in. So dude's crucial to that offense, so hopefully he is going to be ready and good to go for the season because he is electric.
Yes.
And then we got to talk a little bit of the Houston asterisks because Justin Verlander is going to be opening the season on the injured list. He's got right shoulder inflammation during the offseason. But hey, listen, the dude is 41 years old, so that's, I think, to be expected at this point.
Mm-hmm.
You're throwing that hard. And then lastly, certainly not leastly, in the most absurd baseball news of the week, and that's quite saying something, the Philadelphia Phillies extended pitcher Zach Wheeler to a three-year $126 million contract extension. He's 33. He turns 34 here at the end of May. So when the baseball season is in the midst of things, he's going to be 34. But yeah, $42 million a year for a pitcher.
Good for you, man.
God damn. Pretty sure he's a Boris guy.
Yes.
So that makes all the sense in the world.
Yes, it would.
Speaking of Boris guys, Blake Snell, still not signed.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to be changing anytime soon.
Also, if you've seen the latest renderings of the Las Vegas A's new stadium, go back to the drawing board, folks. That sucks.
Yeah, not exactly the creme de la creme at first stages, so we say.
No.
So we just got to put that. Two quick football notes before we head on out here. Very sad news came down via Sunday morning when we heard about the passing of Chris Mortensen.
Yes.
Longtime reporter for ESPN.
Legendary.
Covering football. Just class act, top to bottom. Passed away at the age of 72. I know he was battling throat cancer for
6 or 7 years.
Yeah, for quite some time.
Stage 4.
Yeah. So devastating loss.
Yeah.
I mean, you've seen him over the course of the time, like always would come in with news, always just, you know, integrity. And especially too, like he was breaking news about Peyton Manning all the time too. Like they had a very special bond. So it was absolutely gut wrenching to hear about his passing on Sunday morning.
If you haven't seen the tribute video with Adam Schefter narrating it, I know it's on the ESPN YouTube page. Definitely give that a watch. It's a couple minutes, but it's a very touching tribute.
Absolutely. So on behalf of our entire team here, our deepest condolences go out to his family, friends, and fans all over the world. Like I say, I've grown up watching Chris on ESPN for coverage for the NFL for years, and seeing that news, man, just it absolutely rocked me.
Not the same.
No, definitely not. And there was also a retirement that we definitely have to mention too.
Yes.
From the Philadelphia Eagles.
Jason Kelce.
Jason Kelce has announced an end to his career 13 years in. Tom Craven now has ran in the studio about this.
Nobody likes us and we don't give a fuck.
Yes. Jason Kelce was truly the embodiment of Philadelphia sports.
Dude was a professional's professional.
Yes. So, like I say, he's charismatic as all can be, wearing the Mummers suit after they won the Super Bowl in the parade.
As much as that Super Bowl pains me, I do enjoy the video of that.
Yes. He absolutely embraced Philly. Philly embraced him. His speech for his retirement might be one of the greatest retirement speeches I think I've ever heard.
Yeah.
You know, just like I say, not a dry eye in the house for that. And just, you know, he will be featured somewhere on television.
Uh-huh.
I'm not even saying commentary. He could be like, I can see him doing like the game show route.
Yeah.
I think he's got a big future doing something like that.
Strahan better watch out. He's gonna be coming for his job.
Yeah.
You are absolutely right, Strahan. Seriously, like that whole gap's gonna get filled with Jason Kelce.
Yes, yes. I was gonna say he'll be amazing on that. Yeah. Like he's gonna be on television.
Podcast is doing well enough.
Yeah, New Heights is doing very
well.
He'll be good. He'll be good. So we wish him the best in retirement. This is gonna be done. I don't think he's gonna re-sign 1 year with Kansas City.
No.
To say so, he is Philly true and true. And like I say, if you get the chance to go watch his retirement speech.
Even if that gets thrown out as a possibility in his household, if you've seen enough videos with his wife, his wife won't let that happen.
Right. No, she's amazing about that. That's why she did not support Kansas City wearing any jersey down there.
Philly through and through.
Philly through and through. So definitely congratulations to Jason on a hell of a career. Canton will be calling for him very, very shortly.
Absolutely.
And then, like I say, mark my words, we're going to see him on television one way or another within the next 2 years. Mark my words. Easy.
Go Birds.
On that note, for anything and everything that is the ODPH, you can find it at odphpodcast.com. That's it for the sports edition. So for the one and only Padawan J,
fuck the Astros.
I'm your host, Ken M. Thank you as always for listening to the ODPH podcast. We will see you next time.
It's such waste of time, swiping left and swiping right on people you could know. 'Cause anyone who's worth a damn be worth way more than a picture could ever show. You could find the right light, find the right angle, and never find your soul. And it can feel like a losing battle, and this plot is full of holes. This modern way of finding love just makes me feel so alone. And I can't be the only one sick of staring at my phone. So look up, talk to me. A better way to spend our energy. Just look up, talk to me. Time fable, everyone has just one true love. All I know is you're across this table, and you're all I'm thinking of. So look up, talk to me. A better way to spend our energy. Just look up, talk to me. Ooh.
swiping left and swiping right on people you could know.